Welcome to Wine About History. I'm your host, Max Hamill. With me, as always, is Patty.
Hello, everyone.
And today, this is our second episode in the Brian Boru series. And what are we drinking?
Oh, what are we drinking? We've got, I think it's a French bottle of wine because the label is just one big F. And on to the left side of the
one
F,
big F
is like an oval. And inside the oval are the colors of the French flag. It kind of looks like an oval of the French flag. But I guess it probably has a name. Why don't you take a crack at that?
Locations?
Locations.
F7 locations.
F7 locations. All right, that's about all we can tell you about this. It says, we hope you enjoy your wine made with grapes from the finest locations in France. Okay, so that's why it's called Location. I probably should have taken a better look at this wine bottle, or, you know, got the old reading glasses out or something, because there's some tiny symbol on the side. But anyway, so it's French. It's pink.
It's made by Dave Finney.
Yeah. So it's made from the finest locations in France. And that says a lot, because I think there's some pretty good locations in France.
There is a lot of good locations in France. When last we left you, we were talking about Brian's recent victory over the Viking rulers and Malmorda, his enemy. And so what was happening was Brian was slowly but surely exerting control over Ireland and kicking the Viking scourge out of there, or letting them stay and be taxed as his subjects. So after that victory, Brian rode north to Tara, which was the seat of the High King. And in the north, the Hui Nil tribe, who are now called the O'Neill people, had dominated since time immemorial.
Wow.
To them. They were the total dictators of half of Ireland, and they survived countless Vikings attacks.
Seriously, good for them. They must be tough.
But they were jerks.
Well, that's probably how they survived the Viking attacks.
When Brian came to his land, it wasn't with swords or spears he defeated him, it was his legend. He went north with an army of Irish natives and conquered Danes, and the throne was surrendered to him without a fight.
Oh.
Didn't even need to fight. The Hui Nil was like, this guy beat everybody, so we're just going to let him be High King.
You got this, sir. Yeah. We'll just step out of your way.
So in the year 1002, after years of Viking savagery, civil war, political upheaval, Ireland now had a strong king, a High King. That actually would act as a High King instead of just being a lip service king. And that king dreamed of Ireland before the Danes, because before the Viking invasions, they were kind of going through a renaissance.
Ireland was going through a renaissance?
Of artistry and knowledge, as well as education. In fact, you would invite Irish scholars to come train your son if you were king.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
They really knew their stuff.
They did. So, in fact, the kind of the high point of his life was in the Book of Armagh, which was a manuscript, which also contained the St. Patrick autobiography writings we talked about, the Confessio. He rode up to the Armagh, and he paid the church 20 ounces of gold, which is a lot of money now.
Yeah.
Back then, it was an incredible amount of money.
Yeah.
And in exchange, he was allowed to sign his name Brian Imperator Scotorum, which means King of the Scots or King of the Gaels.
Okay.
Instead of Ard E, which was High King. So he was thinking of himself as Emperor of Ireland. He was trying to revolutionize the identity of Ireland.
The whole island.
The whole island. So for 12 years, he was High King, and Ireland bloomed. So many of the churches, monasteries, and schools that were closed as a result of Viking raids and political upheaval were reopened.
Cool.
Brian had a lot of roads and highways because Ireland was very hard to get through. It was a bog and bad country. He had these roads and highways rebuilt and just flat out built so that Ireland could properly communicate and travel and trade. And then the Shannon, which was a highway that Vikings used to plunder the land, as a sort of symbolic victory, he had churches built along across it. all over it.
Mm-hmm. And then Vikings.
Bronze art, which is a staple of the medieval world, went through another renaissance itself under him. So everything was up. Everything was good. He was a pretty decent king by all standards.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And then, in 1014, an old enemy rose to defy him.
They always do.
They always do.
They can't help themselves. They gotta challenge the king.
They do, because you live a short, brutal life and you want to have a good one. So Mal Morda, who we talked about in the last episode, wanted to defeat Brian. And he had a poor opinion of the High King, so it made him believe that if he defied Brian, other kings and leaders would follow him.
Sure.
He was wrong. Brian was such an effective leader that the nobles of Ireland stayed loyal to him. So Mal sent his cousin, Sigtrygg, to the Vikings in the Orkney Islands in Britain and the Isle of Man, which is in the middle, between on the Irish Sea. It's a little island that had tons of Vikings in it, to the troops. And once again, Vikings would invade Ireland for the promise of land. Now, there's a kind of a big debate of whether this is a Viking invasion or a Viking invasion for Mal Morda, or whether it was Mal Morda really what happened. He wanted to be High King, and he promised a bunch of Vikings land.
Okay.
That's what happened. But there's a big historical debate about it. I won't get into the debate, even though I just did. So all the Norsemen and Norse Gaels of Dublin and were in the service of Mal Morda, but Brian had Vikings in his army as well. The ones from Limerick, Waterford, Wexford, and Cork, which were Viking-held cities, Viking-created cities, they were on his side as well. And they're actually rival gangs of Norse mercenaries from the Isle of Man in both armies.
Oh, that's too funny.
So they're like enemies. So this is really a Irish Civil War. But it has an important role in history. But I'll get to the battle before we get to its long-term effects. So on April 23rd, 1014, on Good Friday, the Battle of Clontarf was fought, and it lasted all day. Several of Brian's sons were killed. His grandson was killed.
Aww.
The Vikings on both sides were slaughtered. It was particularly brutal, even by that standards. We don't have a lot of good details and data about the battle, because there wasn't a historian going, this person was killed and that person was killed. We do know it's particularly nasty.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can I go a little off script here? What kind of weapons did they have then?
That's a very good question.
Did they have bows and arrows back then, or did they just have big old swords that they, chopped each other?
They had all. Typically, what would happen in this time period, and this is a tactic learned by the Vikings and taught as well by the Romans, either side would face each other and form a shield wall, because you had these big, heavy shields made of actually soft wood.
Mm-hmm.
So the enemy's weapon would get stuck in there,
mm-hmm.
and then while they were getting stuck, your partner who was next to you would stab up into their groin with a short knife, cutting open their femoral arteries. Now, the Vikings fought in these skjaldbogs, which is what the shield wall is, and there'd be several rows of it, so the person behind you could cover your head.
Okay.
So it looked like a moving fort than anything else.
Okay.
Of shields. Now, the Irish would have fought in mass, like a wild frenzy, but they realized that's not an effective way to fight someone in a shield wall. It's why the Romans were so effective. So they probably would have copied that tactic as well. They would have used spears.
Mm-hmm.
Swords were rare because they were very expensive.
Oh.
But the average Viking, if he spent a year raiding, could buy one. And a lot of Brian's men probably had swords too, because they would have plundered off the dead Vikings and traded first. So
yeah.
A lot of Brian's men would have swords, but not many. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone had a spear or a knife or an axe. Axe is useful because you can chop into the armor. Chainmail, for those who know, are little tiny rings linked together like chain that you wear on a shirt. But that was very expensive and rare. Nobles would have had it. Lords would have had it. Kings would have had it. Helmets were very rare as well. There were plates riveted together. And if you were lucky, you had one with a nasal.
Mm.
Which was a little piece of metal over your nose to protect your nose.
Because your nose could get chopped off.
Your nose can get chopped off.
Not a pretty sight.
Not an attractive people. That's this little inside joke. But typically what would have happened is both sides would have formed up. They would have slowly come together and crashed into each other. And there would have been a lot of pushing, shoving, and you wouldn't be able to see anything because you had your shield and your helmet, and if you're lucky, armor. But you'd be, if you were the partner that stabbed underneath, you'd be trying to stab up into the groin and femoral artery, which if it gets cut, by the way, bleeds and bleeds and bleeds. There's almost no way to stop it. And if you're above, you've been swinging your axe or sword, or preferably a spear, because a spear is more useful, can you stab someone from way away. And so there's been pushing and grunting and fighting. And the goal of the best warriors would have been to rip open the shield wall.
Okay.
This is typically done by a very strong, very brave man who have taken his great axe, put it at halfway down, looped it over the top of a shield while his friend was slamming a heavy spear into the bottom, tilting it at an angle, and he could yank it out and charge into the shield wall. But if he's in that shield wall by himself, he's completely exposed. So he's probably going to get stabbed and probably die.
He's sort of sacrificing himself. He sacrificed himself
so they would win the battle.
Wow.
Or there's something called a swine head, which is a spear-like shape. It's basically the biggest, strongest, toughest warriors create a blade angle, a triangle, and charge into the shield wall.
Oh. How does anybody live through those battles?
Skill. Okay. That's why you had all these great heroes in those time periods. They were just skilled men who refused to die.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So it's that, and this is, and do you want me to get into more detail? Because I have more detail. Here's a fun fact. It was so intense, people would clench their jaw so hard, their teeth would shatter.
Ew.
That's how intense it would get in those battles.
Oh,
and I'm just like, for those of you who don't know me, well, you might have figured out I'm a big history fan. So that's just like one detail of 1,000 I know about medieval, especially Viking era combat.
Yeah, I love it because I watch that show Forged in Fire,
mm-hmm.
and it's so fascinating. Like all the different weapons people mm-hmm. had for different things.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this was used for this, this, and the other thing when you were on horseback, and this was used for, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and whenever you pick up a medieval replica weapon, you're just, I'm not a weak person. I'm not a big person, but I'm not a weak person. It's impressive how heavy they are.
Mm.
It's impressive. Almost all of them were farm boys.
So Max is being modest. He actually is pretty, pretty jacked.
Shh, don't tell. I get enough fan letters.
Sorry, just saying. But anyway.
But yeah, the typical person would have had a spear, a shield back with cow leather, boiled cow leather, because they would have been fined if you didn't have good cow leather. People would use sheep leather because it was cheaper, but you've been fined for it. And if you're lucky, a helmet that your grandfather captured against the Vikings 2 generations ago, and a padded jacket, which is just heavy cloth,
mm-hmm.
which would help from a dull shield blow, because the weapons would get dull in combat, so until they were dented, you'd just be hacking someone with a club of iron.
Okay.
Now, that happened all day long. And the numbers are probably around in the thousands, maybe 10,000 each. Although Brian's army was bigger, and he had people who were fighting for a united Ireland on his side. And his side won. They eventually broke the invading army and sent them running. And a Viking mercenary named Brodir was one of the people who fled. But he allegedly happened upon the king, High King Brian, while he was praying in his tent, and killed him and his servant, and then ran. And then Vikings...
Wait, he killed who now? I'm confused.
Brian.
He killed Brian?
He killed Brian, allegedly. Or Brian died in the fighting, we're not sure.
Oh, he died.
He fled, and then Brian's younger brother, who is a semi-mythical figure himself, named Ulf the Quarrelsome. His name literally means wolf. Wolf the Fighter is what a great way to translate that into modern...
Awesome.
Runs in the tent, tell his brother that they've won, and he's dead.
Aww.
So he finds Brodir.
Oh, yeah. I would, too.
This is pretty nasty, what he does to Brodir. So this is kind of a gore alert, what he does. He cut open his stomach, gore alert, just warning you people, and tied his stomach around a tree to left him to die.
Oh! You kill my brother, that's what you get.
Yeah, I'm going to literally try to eat you by your own guts and leave you to die. And probably do some other things.
Oh, man. Well, how do you know he was the guy that killed him, though?
Probably tortured somebody until they told him. Mm-hmm. Or there were witnesses.
Okay.
In the chaos of battle, there's normally a witness or two.
Doesn't really matter. He found out.
Yeah, that's why this is kind of a semi-mythical occurrence, probably. Like, it maybe happened.
But it's a good story.
It's a good story. Who cares if it's apocryphal? It's a good story. I'm going to tell it.
Absolutely.
Just have a little asterisk next to it. So what happened after that is that battle, the reason it's important, it's important for a lot of reasons. It's about, it's, even though it's kind of a Pyrrhic victory for Brian's side, because his empire fell apart, although the O'Briens were still a powerful entity for many years, it solidified the Irish identity. Mm-hmm. It made the Irish the power again. The Vikings weren't, you know, were not as powerful as it used to be, although Brian really broke their power earlier in his life. But the Battle of Hastings is the Battle of Stamford Bridge is considered the year the Viking Age ended, 1066. But here we have another battle, 1014, that's just important because it's a battle that shows that the Vikings no longer mattered in Ireland. They had been broken.
Yeah.
They'd been broken. And it was Irish versus Irish with some Viking friends here and there. So they no longer mattered because during the Viking Age, there was just constant battles just for the last kingdom in your land surviving by the skin of your teeth against the pagan invaders.
Huh.
But this wasn't about that. That's why it's such an important battle, not just for Ireland, but for the world. And a lot of historians argue that this is when the Viking Age died, this battle here.
Huh.
Because it's the battle that the Vikings didn't really matter.
They were...
It was an Irish Civil War. Whereas the Battle of Limerick,
That
was very Viking influenced. Because it was the battle for Dublin, which is a Viking stronghold.
Wow. Okay. That is really fascinating. Brutal, gory, and fascinating.
Yes. I have more battle details. DM me for more. I'm kidding.
We could do a whole episode on just battle stuff.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to, because the more you learn, you're more... It's like when you learn about the Holocaust or anything, it's like...
Yeah. Kind of wish I didn't know that kind of thing. All right, well, that's really interesting. So let me just ask you this. If someone's last name is O'Brien, are they a descendant of his?
They're the descendant of his clan.
Okay.
Like, they you know, his Tuatha.
Okay. Which is, I know a couple people whose last name is O'Brien.
Yeah, they could be related to him. They could be related to one of his 50 children because he had like 3 wives.
Oh, good for him.
But you can do that. It's good to be the king.
I can do that better.
But they probably are part of his tribe, which is the Dalcassians. So.
Oh, all right.
You should ask them. Ask them what they know about Brian Boru. Boru, by the way, means of the tributes, because so many cows were sent to him. The walking gold of Ireland.
Huh. Well, that's great. I did not know. I know nothing about Irish history, so.
How dare you?
I know.
Her hair is so red, it's actually kind of ridiculous. If she stands in front of the sunlight, it looks like her hair's on fire.
Oh, well, thanks.
That was a compliment.
Oh, it didn't sound like one. All right. But yes, I am Irish, so I guess I should know some Irish stuff.
Well,
not Irish, like from Ireland. I'm Irish ancestry.
Yeah. And that's a big debate is when people go to, you know, people from America go to their land of their ancestor and like, you're American. Okay, I'll have you know. I just left for a couple generations, dang it. Well, thank you all so much for listening, putting up with us.
Thank you, everybody.
And as usual, if you have any suggestions, visit the Twitter page, you know, DM us, IM us, do whatever, just message us, however your preferred method, and give us suggestions.
Yeah, there's a lot of history out there.
There's a lot of history out there. So we're going to have, it's going to be a mixed bag because I have some guest hosts lined up. Who are going to discuss we're still in negotiation what they're going to talk about. But the plan on the horizon is we're going to do another gangster episode, The Cray Brothers.
Ooh, yes.
Very interesting.
Yay,
man.
Very excited for that one.
You can watch the Tom Hardy movie, Legend, if you want some preparation
good
for
movie,
that.
Yep.
Anything with Tom Hardy in it, I'm down.
Oh my gosh, no
I'm down.
Kidding.
It could be so Tom good. Hardy eating soup for an hour. I'm like, let's watch it.
Absolutely, so underrated. Mm-hmm. Like was that the word I'm looking for?
Underrated,
underappreciated. Maybe?
Like he's
yeah,
he has a lot of
fabulous.
Yeah, we're getting off track.
I know we are getting off track,
but Legend, and then there's a Guy Ritchie movie also about the Cray brothers. It's a bit more intense. And then we're going to go back to one of our old favorite explorers.
Awesome.
Yeah, probably a polar explorer.
Ooh,
I'm debating
cool.
between two. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. And remember, without history,
we wouldn't be here.